Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn, and this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this, what is today? Wednesday, the 11th of August. We have two great shows for you. We're going to be talking about immigration, the first hour of our program. And our guest has done a great deal of reporting on this for the New York Times. One of our guests will be meeting her momentarily. We have two guests the first hour of the program. Hour number two will look at the skies. This guy we're going to speak with is just terrific. He's one of the founders of the Galaxy Zoo. It's an online astronomy project, and it invites members of the public to assist in classifying over 60 million galaxies. And people all over the world have done this. In preparation for the show, I urge you to go to Google or somewhere and look at what the Hubble telescope, the picture they gave us yesterday of a galaxy that is so far away. It's a gorgeous picture, and we'll be talking about how you can become involved in classifying galaxies, and we'll learn about galaxies. What could be more fun than that? We welcome your phone calls both hours of the program. I would anticipate we'll have quite a few as we look at the issue of immigration. And our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Julia Preston is our guest. The first half hour of the program today, she has written extensively on immigration. Some of her recent articles, Students Spared Amid an Increase in Deportations. Also, another article on citizenship from birth is challenged on the right, and the immigration policy aims to help military families. A lot is happening on this issue under the radar, so we'll learn a great deal about what the Obama administration is doing regarding immigration. Julia Preston was a member of the New York Times staff that won the 1998 Pulitzer for reporting on international affairs for its series that profiled the corrosive effects of drug corruption in Mexico. There's an article that is being written about a great deal now, but that was some years ago she was involved in writing that. She became a national correspondent covering immigration for the Times in April of 2006. She was a federal courts reporter, deputy investigations editor, and prior to that, she'd been United Nations bureau chief for a few years, covering the Security Council deliberations on Iraq. She came to the Times in 1995 after working at the Washington Post for a number of years as a foreign correspondent. And she has, we always like to tout, Midwestern roots. She was born in Illinois, and she is our guest the first half hour. And we thank you very much, Julia, for being with us. Hello.
Good morning.
You know, what's interesting to me is there is a lot going on, and you've highlighted this concerning immigration that I don't think the public knows very much about.
Well, it's certainly an issue that people are becoming more aware of, especially since that law was passed in Arizona that really, I think, was a watershed event, both for public awareness and for the polarization of the debate.
You write in your most recent article, I believe, or maybe there's one since then, the Obama administration has been deporting a record number of immigrants convicted of crimes, but they are sparing one group from expulsion, students who came to the U.S. without papers when they were children.
Yes. Well, this is a particular group of illegal immigrants that have really been making their situation known recently. Definitely the most organized and mobilized and galvanized group of illegal immigrants. These are young people who were brought to the United States by their parents when they were children and who have grown up in the United States, gone through public school in most cases. They are high school graduates, and the moment when they realize very often that they are do not have legal immigration status is when they go to apply to college because they are not eligible for financial aid almost of any sort without a Social Security number and legal immigration status.
Mm-hmm. So have there been a number of roundups or investigations of these students, and the immigration department has just sort of looked another way here, or are we looking at people who have not been targeted anyhow?
Well, the Obama administration has set a different set of priorities for deportation and for immigration enforcement. And this administration has placed its priority on catching and deporting immigrants who have been convicted of crimes, that is, criminal aliens. And this is a point of often of confusion, I think, among the American public, because people say, well, it's an illegal immigrant. Isn't that a criminal? Isn't any illegal immigrant a criminal? And the answer to that question is no, because immigration law in the United States is not criminal code. It is civil code. And in many cases, the mere fact of just being present in the United States without immigration status is not a crime. It's a civil violation. It's like a tax violation.
I see.
And so this is an important distinction for these students, because these students, in many cases, or in most cases, they have no criminal record. They have not been involved with the law enforcement system in any way. In fact, in many cases, they are exemplary students, and so this is not a group that immigration enforcement is looking to capture, but they are out of status, and so from time to time they do get arrested. And the Obama administration, on a case-by-case basis, has been finding ways to suspend the deportation of these students.
And have their very public displays, their marches, et cetera, made a difference? Does it make more of a difference for you to say, I'm a good student, here I am, I'm not here, I'm not a legal citizen, but come and get me? Their public display has been effective?
Well, it's kind of a surprising development. I mean, I think we should be thinking about this as the leading edge of a new civil rights movement in the United States. These students have, especially in the past year, become increasingly bold in their protests. It started earlier this year with four students who walked from Miami to Washington, D.C., and then they joined a sit-in in front of the White House. There were a number of students, five students, who staged a sit-in in John McCain's office in Tucson in May. And these students are increasingly organized in national networks, and they conduct petition campaigns. And it does seem that the administration has been sympathetic to their campaigning when they get behind a student who is facing deportation and bring that to the attention of the authorities.
And would you say that there is bipartisan support for this policy?
Well, that is a shifting question. The legislation that would give this particular group of young immigrants legal status is known as the DREAM Act. And the DREAM Act was first introduced in Congress in 2001. It's been reintroduced repeatedly since then, and each time it has enjoyed bipartisan sponsorship. The current sponsors of the DREAM Act are Richard Durbin of Illinois and Richard Lugar, a Republican from Indiana. And this is a piece of legislation that's called comprehensive immigration reform that generally attracts more support and more bipartisan support than the overall package. That being said, the debate over immigration in general has become so polarized this year that many Republicans who might have favored this legislation, I think, are backing away, just feeling that anything having to do with legalization of illegal immigrants is a toxic subject in this electoral season.
So this is a standalone piece of legislation, Julia?
It could be, and that's one of the issues that has arisen at this point. Currently, it is part, the DREAM Act, as it's known by its supporters, is part of the overall package of legislation that's known as comprehensive immigration reform, and that includes measures to give legal status to about 11 million illegal immigrants who currently reside in the United States. But the students have been so organized and so vocal and so persistent in their protests that they have raised the possibility that that the Congress might break out the DREAM Act and move ahead on that legislation this year. And most recently, the majority leader, Harry Reid of Nevada, said that he might consider that. He acknowledges, and I think the Democratic leadership in the White House acknowledge, that comprehensive reform is not going anywhere anytime soon, and certainly not before the election. Senator Reid has acknowledged that and said that he would be willing to move forward with the DREAM Act as separate legislation, but he says he won't do it until he knows he has 60 votes to get it out onto the floor, and the implication is that he doesn't have that right now.
Mm-hmm. How many students are we talking about here?
Well, there was a recent study by the Migration Policy Institute, which is a think tank in Washington that does good research, I think, about legislation and its impact. And they came up with an estimate of 726,000 illegal immigrants, young illegal immigrants, who would be immediately eligible under the terms of the DREAM Act. And So the act actually has quite specific requirements. You have to be less than 35 years old. You have to have arrived in the United States before you were 16 years old. You have to have lived here continuously for 5 years before the date of passage. And so the Migration Policy Institute is finding that at minimum there would be more than 700,000 young people in the United States who would be immediately eligible for the benefits of this legislation if it were to pass.
What does it say about the debate in this country that this legislation has been around and nothing's happened with it since 2001? That's a while ago.
Well, I think it is a surprising thing and perhaps a distressing thing, because many of the, I think, reasoned arguments that people make to be reluctant to grant legal status to the general group of illegal immigrants, many of those arguments have to do with the fact that these immigrants violated the law to come here or to remain here, and people have great concerns about what they think might reward that kind of behavior. But that doesn't really apply in the case of these students, because these are people who did not themselves knowingly violate the law. They were brought here when they were kids. And another remarkable thing I have found about these students is that they're highly motivated. It's a very exceptional group of young people who, in contrast, I think, to many young people in the United States, are highly patriotic. They long for citizenship. It's a surprising thing, and I think it's a sign of the enormous dissension that illegal immigration in general has created in our country, that we have been unable to move forward on this particular piece.
Right. And it is interesting that here you have the best and the brightest, and people are unwilling to take this on, even though partially I would think because they are the best and the brightest and you want to give them a chance, right? So who could be against that?
Well, there is a powerful argument that is very persuasive with many Americans who say we should not be rewarding illegal immigration. The country needs to get control over this. People are very frustrated that the federal government hasn't been more forceful in enforcing the immigration laws. And to an extent, that antagonism that the lack of control over immigration has created in the country has extended to these students in a way that I think maybe makes it difficult for some people to see what an exceptional class of people, of young people, this is. And even from the perspective of the taxpayers, I mean, this is an argument that people often raise, that, are American taxpayers being unfairly burdened with the education of these children? And yet they are educated in the United States. So the idea that we would now, having educated them and having seen them really succeed in our system in an exemplary way, that we would respond to that by deporting them to countries that in many cases they've never seen, and they don't speak the language. It does seem like a sign of how harsh this whole debate has become.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk. You wrote on August 6th about birthright citizenship, and Senator Lindsey Graham, who some had said was the perhaps only Republican who would work with the administration on immigration overall, he's the guy, surprise, surprise, who says that he wants to look at this 14th Amendment, giving the rights to citizenship to anybody who is born in the United States, saying, we just can't have people swimming across the river having children here. That's chaos. And then we had Republicans who were saying, wait a second, they're going a little bit too far here. Talk more about that. Is this going somewhere, this whole birthright citizenship?
Well, I would have, when Senator Graham first made his proposal to offer an amendment to the 14th Amendment, that was about 10 days ago by this time, I would have said no. But this is a debate that has resisted the efforts of the Republican leadership to tamp it down, I think, and in part because I think the notion that children born to people in the United States who do not have legal status automatically become citizens, that notion in itself is somehow is dissonant to many Americans. They say, wait a minute, that doesn't sound right. But in fact, this has been the practice in our country since the 1860s, and the notion that anyone born or the practice and the right of anyone born in the United States to become a citizen is a very deep part of the way that we constitute our society. And so that I think the debate will continue to may continue to go on. But, you know, the prospect of changing the Constitution is a very large, tall order that I don't think any of the Republican leadership in Congress really want to take that on right at the moment.
Julia Preston, our guest the first half hour. She is with the New York Times national correspondent covering immigration for the Times. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. You can also send an email if you would like. That's talk@WPR.org. We start our calls with Anna from Madison. Hi, Anna.
Hi there. I've been following with great interest the variety of guests that have been on recently, taking on parts of this debate, including a real interesting thing about the dirty workers, the rural agriculture. But it was the one that was, I think, yesterday or the day before that most caught my attention. And it wasn't the guest. It was the person who called in who I was waiting. I was straining to hear if Deutschland Uber Alles was playing in the background because the guy was raving about racial purity and those, you know, the invading hordes, and we have to fling them for it. And what struck me about that was how, you know, how much hate and misinformation is put into this debate. And I'm really interested in hearing from your guest how does she see, or does she see, if there is any hope of kind of reinserting the reality of what's actually going on, like people aren't actually stealing other, you know, American quote-unquote jobs, and that these people's children, quote-unquote, are not taking away spaces in college or in grade school that are from other people. Is there any trajectory for changing the way the debate is conducted or anything like that? Then I'll listen. I'll take my
thanks, answer Anna. Here. Okay, thanks for the call.
Well, I would say a couple of things about that. One is that the polling that we've done this year, the New York Times, the Washington Post, CNN, there's a lot of pretty consistent polling that show a couple of things. One is that in the wake of that tough law that passed in Arizona, there is a lot of support both in the state of Arizona and in the country at large for serious enforcement of immigration laws. There's a feeling that the federal government has really fallen down on its responsibilities to keep immigration under control. And so that on one hand. On the other hand, there's a surprisingly consistent majority of Americans who favor, at least in polling, some sort of path to legal status for the illegal immigrants who are in the country. And so And that is actually consistent with the legislation that is before Congress, and that Senator Graham himself was at one time an author in writing. Senator Charles Schumer of New York is the lead author of that legislation. But that's a package called Comprehensive Immigration Reform that includes both a lot of pretty tough enforcement measures and also a path to legal status for illegal immigrants that is a kind of a plea bargain. You would have to admit to your violation and pay penalties and back taxes, and it's almost like going to court, the formula that's proposed there. So there, in the country, there does appear to be a support for some kind of path forward along those lines. The problem is, at the moment, a political one, which is that forces that are opposed to that, to any form of legalization for illegal immigrants, are very vocal and have many arguments on their side. The overridingly persuasive one has to do, again, with the notion of the rule of law and the reluctance to allow people who are residing in the country without legal status to somehow reap any benefit from legislation for having done that. And that is a kind of a political deadlock that we are in right now that one hopes will be broken up in some fashion after the election in November.
Here's an interesting email that's come in. I met Julia in Postville while managing the radio station there during the Postville crisis. I'd like to know, why is it such a crucial matter for the government to downplay or even deny their continuing heavy-handed tactics during immigration raids in general? That's Jeff from Postville.
Oh, hello, Jeff. Yes, Jeff did public radio proud, I will say, in Postville.
Ah.
Yes, absolutely. He played a very important role in providing information and was kind of a community point of information during that very traumatic set of events for the for Postville. I don't know if your listeners remember, but there was a major raid there. In 2008, and hundreds of immigrants were prosecuted criminally, and it was a very traumatic experience for that part of the state of Iowa. The deportations are definitely still going on, and the administration would argue that they, if anything, are tougher than the Bush administration on some kinds of illegal immigrants. And this is a point of dispute. One of the things that this administration is doing is dramatically stepping up the immigration inspections of people who are taken into custody, so that now in many, many counties across the country, immigrants who are booked into county jails, for example, on, you know, a DUI or some kind of traffic, significant traffic violation, or there's a family fight or that kind of thing, are put through an immigration check now. And if they are found to be out of status, they are put in removal proceedings. And so the numbers of deportations overall are really picking up. The Obama administration is setting a faster pace of deportation even than the last years of the Bush administration, when President Bush did dramatically accelerate his prosecution and deportation of illegal immigrants. And so something that is a little counterintuitive about the Obama administration, in view of the fact that President Obama has said that he's in favor,
yes,
of comprehensive reform.
So why is he doing it?
I think that, it goes back to the real consensus, I think, out in the country that we can't have any kind of benefits for illegal immigrants. We can't go to a program to provide legal status to illegal immigrants until we have the immigration system and enforcement of immigration laws under control. I think people are anxious that if you provided legal status, it might generate a new wave of illegal immigration. And so this administration has come down on the side of those who say that we really need to get the enforcement in order first and then proceed to comprehensive reform.
Mm-hmm. And finally, I want to ask you about employers who are being scrutinized. Is that extensive in this country, that a lot of employers who have illegals are firing them?
Well, this is another surprising policy, a subtle change that the Obama administration has undertaken that has had a major impact on employers, which is instead of those kind of flashy raids like the Postville raid, where you had great trauma to the community and you had families separated and children left abandoned in school while their parents were taken away and criminal prosecutions. Instead of that kind of raid, what the Obama administration is doing is called a silent raid, where they send in immigration enforcement agents to inspect the hiring records of employers, and they do a kind of audit. And then in cases where the Social Security numbers don't match the records of the Social Security Administration or the immigration numbers don't match, in cases where there's a mismatch or an irregularity in the hiring documents, then Immigration and Customs Enforcement goes back to the employer and says, there's an irregularity here, we're just letting you know. And they leave it up to the employer to fire those workers. And in fact, this has been quite effective in getting forcing employers to fire large numbers of immigrant workers. They're doing it quietly now. And ICE is not necessarily running down those workers to deport them. But it is creating a very difficult situation for those workers. And in some cases, it's not clear that that these are labor markets where there are immediately American workers to replace them. In the case that I wrote about recently, it was an big apple orchard out in Washington State where the grower ended up having to bring in guest workers from Jamaica and from Mexico, in fact, to replace the Mexican workers who'd been with the company for many years because they're apple picking is very hard work. It's low wage work, and there just wasn't a consistent labor supply in Washington State, even in the recession, to fill the number of jobs that they had available.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you for your extensive reporting on this very, very important issue. You've taught me so much, and I appreciate your work. Thank you for being with us, Julia.
Well, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
My pleasure.
Julia Preston, we'll have her on again to learn more about what's going on really quietly with immigration reform. And we'll also get a hold of Jeff from Iowa Public Radio to look at what has happened in Postville following the Postville crisis, which we reported on a couple years ago. And then there was that great book about Postville, too. Fascinating story. Okay, we're continuing on the same theme here, so keep your phone calls with us because we're talking about immigration. We're looking at a couple aspects of immigration, the DREAM Act, and other aspects this hour of the program. Peggy Orchowski will join us in just a moment, and I'll tell you about her in just a moment. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Second hour of our program today, we're going to be talking about a wonderful program that's featured in the current issue of Astronomy Magazine. It's the Galaxy Zoo, and ordinary people are classifying galaxies. It is one of the world's most enjoyable, according to the person who started it. I guess he'd feel that way. Citizen science projects, and it's also one of the most successful. We'll find out why, and you may be prompted to join yourself after the hour of conversation. We are continuing our conversation about immigration, and our guest this hour of the program is Peggy Orchowski. She is the author of Immigration and the American Dream, Battling the Political Hype and Hysteria. She's a journalist who's been following the politics of the immigration issue for over a decade, starting with controversy over bilingual education in Santa Barbara, California in the 90s. She lived in South America as a journalist, mostly in Peru, Ecuador, and then Argentina, where she was an Inter-American Press Association fellow. She has lived in France and in Switzerland, speaks and writes Spanish, French, and German, and raised her children to be bilingual. She currently lives in Washington, covers The Hill full-time, is the credentialed congressional correspondent for the Hispanic Outlook on Higher Education, which is a national magazine, and she's written for a number of other publications as well. She says, I like this, her most exciting job was as director of the National Olympic Committee Department of the L.A. Olympic Organizing Committee, where she developed a staff of interpreters and team and press liaisons for the Olympic Village. That was fun. We'll be taking phone calls for her as well. Our number is 800-486-8655. The email address is talk@wpr.org. Hello, Peggy. Thank you so much for being with us.
Hi, Kathleen.
Hi.
Delighted to be here. I love Wisconsin and Minnesota. So
oh, do you?
I'm really happy to be talking to you.
Well, that's saying something.
I was up there on a book a book presentation last year, and I love getting the different perspectives on immigration, and it's really different in the Northwest and in the North, and also this is really exciting to be able to talk with you.
Oh, well, great. We're excited to talk with you, too. That's wonderful. Let's get a little more information about the DREAM Act and whether or not there's bipartisan support for this, why this has been singled out as maybe a place to start when we look at immigration reform.
Right. Well, there's actually two bills, and for those who are really wonks, there, the Senate bill is S-729, and the House bill is H-R-1751. They're exactly the same bills. The Senate bill is sponsored by Durbin and Lugar, as well as Harry Reid and Martinez and Leary, Lieberman, and, of course, Kennedy's last year, and Feingold. And they have been introduced in various forms over the past 10 years. They're mainly pitched as being as a way to fill the dream of immigrant children or the children of illegal immigrants who are themselves illegally in the country. And that has to be stressed. So often they'll just say immigrant children. Not just to go to college. I mean, they could go to college as foreign students, of course, but the idea is that they can go to college as in-state students, get public-funded grants, scholarships, and loans. But even more important, I mean, what's the use of going to college, getting a special deal, even if you're here illegally, and then you can't work afterwards?
Right.
So the important thing is that it would give them a green card and then a pathway to citizenship so that they could work. And, you know, when you really come down to it, most immigration matters are about work. So I think we can't get just overly romantic about the dream of going to college. The idea is to be able to work.
Mm-hmm. You've written extensively about this act. What do you describe as the most serious flaw of the DREAM Act?
Well, there's three. I've just had a piece in U.S. News and World Report, .com. Opinion that came out actually yesterday. I think there are several things that really have to be tweaked, and one of them is that this, the act as it's written now, is giving a tremendous benefit, public benefit, to, again, these are young adults. These are not children anymore, and they're adults who know they're in the country illegally, otherwise they wouldn't apply. They're giving this benefit to people who are here illegally, but not to people who are here legally. That is the children of temporary immigrants, our doctors, scholars, research associates, high-tech workers, the H-1Bs, who are probably in many schools, some of the brightest students, the real valedictorians who are, there, many of them are Asian, many of them are come from Eastern Europe. This is just not a Latino thing, so we have to remember that, too.
Mm-hmm.
And every hearing I've gone to on the DREAM Act, there's always been students that are here legally that under their parents' temporary visas. And when they graduate from high school, they don't get a pathway to citizenship. They wouldn't get public loans and all that. It's it just seems so unfair that you give a benefit to someone who's here illegally, but not to someone who's here legally. And then, of course, the out-of-state thing. American kids don't get out-of-state benefits and out-of-state tuition, and it is not clear. Now, this thing, this also, that as far as the loans go and the student benefits, it depends on the state. This is actually, the act is actually allowing states to offer to illegal immigrants a benefit that it doesn't offer to legal students and U.S. citizens. And again, there's a fairness thing here.
Mm-hmm. What about the act itself? Have we reached a time where the passions are so high and so opposed to each other that it's virtually impossible to make headway on any kind of immigration issue?
Well, I don't think so on this one. There's several. There's several issues that definitely have legs. The problem is, the political problem, and this is definitely where the DREAM Act is having a problem, is that advocates for comprehensive immigration reform, and let's be clear, comprehensive immigration reform means including a pathway to citizenship or an amnesty for millions of people who are here illegally. And if it doesn't include that, then advocates say it's not comprehensive. So when we talk about comprehensive, that's a little code word for it includes amnesty or pathway to citizenship for people who are here illegally. It is so important to advocates that comprehensive be passed, that they don't want anything that could possibly pass as a standalone that has a lot of support, such as the DREAM Act, such as the Ag Jobs Bill that Dianne Feinstein has every year introduced a very good Ag Jobs Bill that would allow, like, those farmers, those apple farmers in Wisconsin and Washington and in New York and all the other states that have real need for seasonal workers.
Mm-hmm.
Even the Hispanic Caucus is not for an Ag Jobs Bill that only lets them come in temporarily. Mm-hmm. They want a pathway to citizenship attached. In a way, the amnesty could be said to be poisoning some of the really good bills, if you want to say it really sharply. And so there is an organization of Hispanic college and university administrators called HACU. It's a Hispanic Association of Colleges and Universities. At their annual meeting this year, they absolutely pushed that the DREAM Act be offered separately. And a spokesman from the White House, Juan Sepulveda mainly, who is the White House liaison with the Education Department, very great guy, really very up in all the issues he'd be worth having on your show. He is adamant that the DREAM Act has to be part of comprehensive. So here we have these two bills that are offered separately. There is a couple of Republicans on them, but the White House and particularly the Congressional Hispanic Caucus does not want it to be offered separately. They want it to drive the comprehensive immigration reform, you see.
Yeah, I just can't imagine, given what's going on now, that comprehensive immigration reform is anywhere in sight.
I don't think so, but I think some of these bills that may be fair, or if they're tweaked, they could be a little fairer.
Right.
Again, with the DREAM Act, I think the fact that they only have to be here 5 years is not fair compared to the temporary immigrants who are often here 6 to 9 years, and foreign students are often here, you know, 20 years,
mm-hmm.
and their kids don't get the benefits. So, and frankly, I mean, from a personal experience of mine, maybe we should do away with in-state tuition altogether. I mean, let everybody have it.
Well, there's a show down the road.
You're
just full of ideas today.
There's another issue. One reason that HACU is probably particularly interested in this bill is because about 10 years ago, there was instituted a thing called a Hispanic Serving Institutions. You know about those. They're you know, we've always had minority black colleges that were created after the Civil War and some wonderful colleges are created in the South, particularly for blacks.
Mm-hmm.
And they've gone on to be what they call traditional black colleges. And so they have been given special grants and loans and help from the Education Department. Well, about 10 years ago, Hispanics also wanted to have some recognition for their needy students, so they created what is called a HSI, the Hispanic Serving Institution. They're not separate colleges. To be a Hispanic Serving Institution, any college or university has to document that they have 25% of their students are Hispanic. Hispanic, by the way, is a self-identification. There's no, you know, Latinos and Hispanics are not a race, so it's a self-identification thing, even in the census now. Well, as you can imagine, the DREAM Act, while it's not, wouldn't benefit only Latinos, a large number of Latinos, hundreds of thousands of Latinos, would be legalized through this act or be able to go to college. So, of course, this would help universities with that 25%. So, you know, there's a money thing behind all of
this. Oh, there's always a money thing, Peggy, isn't there? We're going to welcome phone calls. Peggy Orchowski is our guest this half hour, author of Immigration and the American Dream, Battling the Political Hype and Hysteria. She is a journalist. She's been following immigration for over a decade, lives in Washington right now, and covers The Hill as the credentialed congressional correspondent for the Hispanic Outlook on Higher Education. 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. The email address, talk@WPR.org. And this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up the second hour of our program, we'll be talking with Chris Lintott, who is the co-founder of the Galaxy Zoo and co-author of Bang, The Complete History of the Universe. Imagine writing a book like that. He'll join us by phone from England, and we'll talk about this project. It's an online astronomy project inviting members of the public, and they have all kinds of members who have joined now from all over the world to help in classifying over 60 million galaxies. Whew! It'll be fun. It'll be a really good hour. Phone calls now for Peggy. Let's go to Steve from La Crosse. Hi, Steve.
Hi, good morning. I believe you said it was Senate Bill 729. Is that right for the DREAM Act?
Let me look here. The Senate bill, S-729. The House bill is H.R. 1751. They're the same.
1751, okay. All right. What I was going to say is with the DREAM Act, and this kind of goes with another, some of the other news programs I saw, I believe maybe within the last year or so, is that illegal immigrants can actually join our military, sign up for 3 years or 4 years, whatever it is. However, when they're done, they still have their illegal status and then could be deported. And I really think that should be a gateway for citizenship. And I believe that should tie in with the DREAM Act, where that if anyone wants to go for the DREAM Act that is an illegal, they should be required to do public service or military service for 3 years, then given their college benefits to show that they really want to be an American citizen. And I really
actually
think that's important.
The DREAM Act does, it's an either-or. You can, after you've graduated from high school, you have to have been here before the age of 16, and you have to have been in the country continuously for 5 years. But if you came in at 15 and a half and were here 5 years, it's up till 35 years old. And graduate from a high school, have no criminal record, and then either go to college for 2 years or serve in the military for 2 years. Then you are given a green card and expedited path to citizenship.
But
illegals, as far as I know, the military, it's someone here on a temporary visa or here on a green card, of course. And there are many, many Hispanics here on green cards, so let's not think that all Hispanics are here illegally. You know, they're certainly not. And someone on a green card or temporary visa can join the military. The military
Wait, one second, Steve.
They don't take illegals, but
okay.
I don't know.
Okay. Steve, go ahead.
I think that if someone wants to go to college and get the free ride or get the benefits or whatever, right. No, it's not either or. It's got to be you have to do the military, then you get to college.
No,
I really think that's the important part. The other part is, my other question was, is you said guest workers, and I'm kind of, a guest worker is a temporary worker, right, that we give a green card to that says
no,
you can
no
come
green
in
card.
And work here for X number of time, and then you have to go back.
No, it's not a green card. It's not a green card. I didn't mention it. Julie did. But a guest worker is, by definition, a temporary. You know, there's really only, to make this really easy, there's only three kinds of immigrants, really, in terms of law. There's a permanent immigrant, which is a green card, which is the only permit that you can get citizenship from. But you can be in your entire life on a green card. And the majority of people on green card never get citizenship. So green card is a permanent immigrant. Then there's temporary immigrants, and we have dozens and dozens of different categories for work and religion and performance and students and visitors and tourists and business and all kinds of things. But they're temporary. They have a limited time they can be here. Most of them have strictly, very severe restrictions on work. And then the third category is illegal. They have no permit to be here. So those are the three. So when you talk about a guest worker, that's a temporary.
Okay, all right, that's what I need is doing that. The other thing I'd like to make a comment on this whole thing is about 4 or 5 years ago, there was a movie made called A Day Without a Mexican.
Yeah.
And are you familiar with that movie?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, I recommend that everyone that's complaining about illegal immigrants actually see that, because basically what I believe the work that most illegal immigrants do is the work that we can't export out of the country. Otherwise, that work would already be gone.
Well, that's the point. But, I mean, again, I get offended by stuff like that because it almost assumes that all Mexicans are illegal, and of course they're not. I'm from Santa Barbara, California. I just got back from the wonderful Spanish Days fiestas. I mean, Santa Barbara has generations and generations of Mexican-Americans there, or as some groups like to call them, American-Mexicans. Every street, Sola and Cota and Cabrillo and Castillo and De La Guerra, there's families I went to school with, kids with those names there, you know. Let's not, when they go a day without a Mexican, it's like all Mexicans are illegal. They're not. And, of course, they do jobs that everybody does, you know.
Thank you, Steve, very much for your call. Bob in Parkfield, hi. Hello, Bob.
Oh, hi, Marshfield.
Oh, Marshfield, hey, Bob.
Yes, say, regardless of what you think should happen, you have to recognize the fact that the illegals and possibly some of the guest workers do take jobs that could be filled by local natives, many unemployed. Now, yes, they would not accept those jobs at $7 an hour with no benefits, but if you offered a reasonable wage with some benefits and some security, those jobs would be taken. And if that means it costs me a nickel extra for a Big Mac, and I doubt that the impact is that much, so be it.
Yeah, I do a column for the Hispanic Outlook, and I every so often I'll do a vocabulary alert. So I love how things change. For a long time, President Bush liked to say that illegal, they always say immigrants do, but they really mean illegal immigrants do jobs that Americans won't do. And then it became pretty universally understood that it was illegal immigrants do jobs that Americans won't do at those wages. So now I've noticed that some of the Democratic administration is talking about illegal jobs that Americans won't do at competitive wages. Competitive meaning, you know, as low as they can get. So, you know, you got to watch vocabulary on some of this stuff. But, yeah, the illegals, there's very few jobs except maybe bend-over agricultural jobs that Americans don't do. And I must say, there's a lot of jobs that immigrants do that Americans so-called won't do that maybe no human being should do. I mean, many of the first world countries, jobs that we have illegal immigrants doing, and even things like collecting parking tickets, they do by machines in other first world countries.
There is a lot of rhetoric that some would consider quite offensive surrounding this issue, isn't there?
Oh, there is. And a lot of my book is about that. I don't take a position on policy, but I just get enraged at the hype. And a lot of it, now that Lou Dobbs is gone, so much of it is coming from the left, which is just a killer since I'm a lifelong Democrat. But I think one of the words, and even I think Julie, she used the word out of status. I think you have to be careful with words like that. Here illegally, and never had permits in the first place, so their permits aren't out of status. It's out of status is a word you usually use for somebody who's obeyed their visa. the word criminal. Now, Julie's absolutely right. I'm really glad she pointed out that that to be in the country illegally is only a misdemeanor, a civil offense. However, anybody, if you and I use a false document to get something, a benefit, that or a fraudulent document, that's a felony. And so I do not think Democrats should use the word undocumented because you're kind of encouraging people to move from what before is a misdemeanor status to now a felony status. And that is a criminal status, you know.
So what do you think the right word is?
Well, even Schumer now is saying, let's call it what it is. It's illegal immigrant. I mean, in law, they're called illegal aliens, and somehow aliens has come to mean little green men, so let's not use that. The Migration Policy Institute has tried to push the much more less innocuous word unauthorized, but that hasn't really taken, an unauthorized immigrant. I mean, that's probably a good politically correct word, but even Schumer says, let's call them illegal immigrant. You know, that's what they are. They're in the country illegal. They're foreign. I like to say foreign nationals living and working in the country illegally, but I can't use that in articles, you know. So a lot of people just shorten it to illegals. Well, they are illegal. And Schumer says, and
we have about 5 seconds.
You're right that he is now saying we have to have enforcement first, not enforcement only, but enforcement first.
Thank you, Peggy, so much for being with us. Please join us again. Our guests, so much information, both of them. Peggy Orchowski, congressional correspondent for the Hispanic Outlook on Higher Education. Thanks to Chrissy Pease for producing this hour, and thanks to Chrissy as well for on-air production. Sorry we couldn't get to all of your emails. We'll post them on Facebook if we can do that. We'll return following the news.